podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Did you miss us? It is the Raw Milk Review back again, coming in your ears. Gibby, how are you doing?
Steady away as always, Chief. Steady away. How about yourself?
Yeah, not so bad, mate. It is the 20th of October. It seems like we haven't recorded in about 6 months. It's been poor from our end, really, hasn't it? We have to apologise to everybody.
Yeah, I think we were at Peel Park last time we did one, weren't we? Still playing at Peel Park. But we're back now. Scarcity creates demand, that's what I say.
Yeah, it was all a marketing ploy. None of you bought mugs, so I guess it didn't work. But like you say, yeah, scarcity. I think we can promise that we'll never have such a hiatus ever again. I'd like to think so anyway. Jesus Christ.
Barring death or injury. And even then, probably still force one out from the hospital ward.
Yeah, or the grave. So like we say, it is the 20th of October. Stanley have just come away from the Valley with three much, much needed points, to be fair. It puts us on up to 10th in the league. We've played 13 games, won 6, drawn just the 1, and lost 6. That puts us on 19 points, and we're 3 points behind the playoffs. So, yeah, we're just going to have a little chat about how we think the season's been going so far, what kind of start we've had, and just do all the usual kind of stuff. Does that sound all right?
Sounds a plan, Stan.
What have you had for your tea then?
Controversially, I've not had my tea yet. I'm still weighing it up. Went to the Golden Arches at lunch. So I'm weighing up as a grown man whether it's just acceptable to have a plate of mash and gravy for tea. Hmm. I know you're a big judge of teas. Is that an acceptable tea to have as a 31-year-old gentleman?
Probably not, but it's Wednesday night. It's already 10 to 9. By the time we do this, it's going to be pushing 10. I'd probably say that's absolutely fine. Or could you just leave it? Skinny people do that, don't they? Absolute freaks. Do you know, when like, I didn't fancy any tea last night. I just didn't have any. Like, what?
Yeah. To paraphrase the great philosopher Alan Partridge, scum, subhuman scum.
I mean, that is mental, isn't it? That's a red flag. When someone says something to you like, I'm not that hungry, I'm just going to leave it. What? Just get out.
Yeah, you've got to have something. I'll probably just, I'll find something at the back of the freezer and have something later on. But yeah, you're right. You've got to have something for your tea.
You do you, mate. Who cares? This lot don't care. No one's probably even listening. So yeah, I mean, yeah, it feels weird being recording again. It feels like we're a bit rusty. From my end, to say the least, really. What have you been up to in general? And do you have any reason or, you know, why has it been so long from our point of view, you know, from your end?
I think it's been, I think with live football being back, I think that's sort of taken over to a degree. I think when it was sort of, you know, the COVID era, the sort of iFollow era, I think it just gives you a bit of something to do. You know, you want to talk about football. You want to try and sort of live it vicariously, you know, through talking about it. Whereas now it's back, you know, it's taking over things again. And obviously life gets in the way as well, you know, chipping away at bits and pieces. I've obviously become an expat and move down south to South Manchester. So I'm getting my bearings here. So that's obviously took a bit of time as well. And obviously, as you know yourself, this thing that that capitalism makes us do called work sometimes gets in the way as well. So a plethora of reasons, but we're back. And that's the main thing. We're back from the dead, just in time for Halloween. See what I did there?
Oh, that's an excellent segue, yeah. Yeah, I think much of the same, like you say. I think it's just a factor. By the time you've finished with work, you know, you're ready to just lie and pass out, aren't you, really? Well, I am anyway, at the end of the day. But yeah, it's been a weird start to the season for me, because I've only been to one home game. For a couple of other reasons. I've only been to two or three away games as well, nowhere near the amount that I usually would be doing. Part of that, I think, is because I've been living a little bit further away. I haven't been going home just as much. But like I say, with everything opening up, I've just been doing other stuff as well. And I think that last year, like you said there, Stanley was pretty much the highlight of the week, really, for me, in lockdown. Mm. And when you've got other stuff going on and you haven't seen people for the best part of 2 years and there's little things going on here and there, it's just taken a backseat in my life, if I'm honest. And I could sit there and tell you, come up with all these excuses and now, you know, there's been all these things in the way, but it hasn't. It's just been life getting in the way. And you know, I am a massive Stanley fan, and it's part of my DNA as a person. But I also like going out and getting pissed on a Saturday.
But also, as well, it's not for want of trying. We probably tried to do this about 10 times, and like you say, the call of the sesh sometimes is just too much.
Yeah,
you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you've got to hammer it, because in the post-COVID era, I think you appreciate it a bit more. You know, that casual Tuesday pint that you might not have gone for 2 years ago, you'll snap the hand off for it now, you know. And thinking back to what we said before this podcast started in terms of how long it's been, I think my exact quote was, for fuck's sake, I'm going to have to find that fucking headset again.
Yeah.
You know, which illustrates just how long it's been. But again, we're back now. We're alive and kicking. And, you know, as you say, coming in your ears and bring you some fresh milk from the raw milk.
Yeah, fresh and unpasteurized. Delicious. Mm. So, the club, before we get into sort of in particular fixtures and things like that, it was the shirt giveaway last week as well, which I know that we mentioned this time last year, which was around the time that we did our first podcast. It's nearly been a year now that we've been doing these. We should probably get a regular spot. But anyway, that's for us to talk about. The shirt giveaway, hundreds of year three pupils descended on the Wham Stadium to receive their free replica shirts for members of the first team. And John Coleman also on hand for the event. The fifth year in a row that the club has donated shirts to youngsters, with chairman and owner Andy Holt coming up with the initiative. That was taken from, I think it was the Lancashire Telegraph. So all good stuff. But the one thing that I wanted to say there was, because we've mentioned that before and how it's a good scheme, and how when we were growing up, you know, you were sort of chastised for being the Stanley fan and you were the weirdo. But what we're doing is now, what really stuck out to me there is this is the fifth year in a row that they've been doing that, which now means you're going to have secondary school kids that are going to have that initial sort of Stanley introduction, and they're going to be maybe talking about it at secondary school and sort of getting more fans involved, which I thought was really, it doesn't seem like 5 years ago, but, you know, yeah, it's really good, isn't it?
It is, and it's coincided with the sweet spot in terms of on the pitch as well. So if you look at the table now, we're sandwiched in between Bolton Wanderers and Sheffield Wednesday. So those kids who are going to school, it's not an embarrassment. You know, when I was at the school, Rovers win the league, Burnley, League One, Championship club. How did Stanley get on? Oh, you lost 4-0 to Stalybridge or Bamba Bridge or whoever. You know, we're a competitive club. Kids are used to playing us as on FIFA. They're used to seeing us on the telly. So there isn't that stigma anyway to stop them getting hooked. And now you've got them young, like you say, 5 years, they're going to keep coming. And you only need, you know, if you've got 2,000 year three kids in the borough, you only need 10% of them to come back, and it's 200 new fans every year. And they're going to bring family. They're going to bring friends. What I've really enjoyed, you know, growing up in those troubled times of Blackburn and Burnley fans everywhere you turn, is seeing people say, you know, picture the kids in the Stanley top saying, you know, this is a Blackburn household traditionally or a Burnley household, but we're going to get along to a game because of this kind gesture. But then once people are in, the hooks, then you've got them, especially the kids. So it's a great thing for the club to do. It's just good to see the shirts walking around Accrington as well. And it's one small step, I think, in the transformation from Accrington being a town with a football club to an actual football town. You know, you do see Stanley shirts in the town now. You do see people walking up Wally Road on a match day. It's got that sort of football feel now, which we never had when I was growing up. And even, you could argue, in the sort of the early league days of struggle, we never had that feel as well. The apathy from the town is also sort of slowly fading away. People are not interested in football. They see these kind things that's being done for the town. You know, I've had family and friends say to me, I'm not really a football fan, but I think it's great what they do with the giveaway. It's great what they do with schools. It's great what they do at the hub, things like that. So Accrington is red. And it's not often we've been able to say that with confidence, but it is red. And it's only going to get better, you know. Great times for the town.
Yeah, it is. And strangely enough, actually, you know, that reminds me of something that I saw at work the other week as well, actually. I was, you know, most people know that I'm a teacher. And I was walking through our sick form at work. And I don't even know whether I told you about this, but I was just walking through sick form, and the sick form kids don't wear uniform. They come in their own gear. A lad walked past me. He just had the black Stanley shirt on, black Stanley away shirt. And I was just like,
what?
Rooted to the spot. I was just, I was like gasped in disbelief. My mouth must have hit the floor. I've never, ever seen that in my life in Manchester.
Yeah.
And did I tell you about it? No.
No, I haven't heard this tale.
No, this is going to sound like something that we acted, but if I haven't actually told you. So I'm walking upstairs to go to my classroom with my Stanley mug full of coffee. I've opened the door and this kid stood there in this shirt. So I like double took him and I was like, is that a Stanley shirt? And he just went, yeah, Accrington Stanley shirt. And I went, are you a Stanley fan? And he went, yeah, I'm a Stanley fan. And then I just went, are you from Accrington? And he went, no. It was just a real, but I just didn't know what to say. So I just pointed at my mug and just went, I'm a Stanley fan as well. And it was just the most surreal moment ever to be, I know, Jesus Christ, we're only around the corner from Accrington, aren't we? But just put that into context, you know, that's such an odd thing to see a League One side being worn by a kid who, you know, says he's not even from Accrington and he's probably never even been to Accrington.
I think I would have had a stroke, I think.
It was very, very weird. It was a Friday morning and it I was absolutely buzzing, actually.
That is odd.
I need to find out who he is, actually, and just get to the bottom of this story. Like, why does he have the shirt? Why is he an Accrington Stanley fan? Is it just a random shirt, you know, like a family member or something?
Yeah, I think there's a weird culture now with teenagers now, isn't there, where they're attracted. If they don't have a match-going family member, they sometimes pick teams that they've seen on FIFA or seen on telly or whatever. So, you know, it's like when you see this random sort of random Dutch Rochdale fans and things like that. It may be something like that, but he bought a shirt, fair play to them. South Manchester branch growing day by day.
Yeah, there we go. There's a few of us now, isn't there? A few of us now. But yeah, so it just reminded me of that. I mean, ultra positive again from the club. And yeah, like you say, it coincides with the team doing pretty well. So what do you think about our start to the season? You know, before the season, you were very much saying that you thought we'd try and push on again and go for the playoffs. Has that changed? Do we reassess our aims for the season now that we've played, you know, a good chunk of it? Or, you know,
we're all fickle, aren't we, as football fans? Whether we admit it or not, a few defeats you're getting relegated, a few wins you win the league. It's funny how 3 points change your perception. So before that Charlton win last night, I was looking at the table thinking, I've over-egged this. I thought we were going to have our greatest ever season. Maybe I got greedy from how close we got last season. But then we won last night. Suddenly we're back in touch of the playoffs again. Like you say, sandwiched between Bolton and Wednesday. And I start to go, actually, maybe I was right. Maybe we are going to have a tilt. So it's been a mixed bag. But I think it's a positive thing that we had such a sort of wretched mini run of form. And we've shipped so many goals. And we're still, I know it's early days. And I know you can't look at the table really till Christmas. But just because to show no one's sort of, everyone's beating everyone. No one's getting sort of, you know, dragged away, if that makes sense. So I'm quietly positive. The key really for me now is, let's face it, the last sort of 5, 6, 7 games, we've had a one-man defence in Michael Nottingham. The rest of the defenders, they've been off their heads. You know, whether they've been on glue or crack or whatever, I don't know. But he's been defending on his own whilst at the same time trying to get the golden boot. So
yeah, is he still top scorer now? Oh, it must be Harry Pell now. Must be.
Well, I was surprised he wasn't called up for that Hungary game for England, to be honest. But, you know, if we get some defenders in, maybe get a few people on loan, pull a few strings, we tighten up at the back, we'll be fine. Because going forwards, we're shit up. You know, we look great. We look like we're going to score every time we go forward. And that's without the sort of, which I'm sure we'll come to, the Dion Charles saga as well. You know, and surprise, surprise, Harry Pell's turning into sort of, you know, a bit like his similar namesake, Pelle. I mean, that first goal last night was absolutely disgusting, wasn't it? Absolute filth.
Yeah, Andy and, should have had a second one if the cameras are to be believed.
Yeah. I mean, he's been an absolutely outrageous signing. Not just those goals last night, but the way he gets stuck in. And the way he's embraced the ethos of the club as well. You know, the kind of sort of team spirit we talk about a lot.
We mentioned that in our last podcast. There was inklings of that, wasn't there already? But he's well and truly got sort of involved in absolutely everything, hasn't he?
It's that sort of joker in the pack, isn't he? Like, how good was that Colby Bishop interview when Dan Jewell's interviewing Colby and like Harry Pell just walks past? Are you still here?
Little
things like that. He just, the only way you can explain it is he gets it and he seems to really enjoy it. You know, it's a gamble, isn't it? You come up from the south, you're on big money, you move 200 miles, and will he sort of... I know we're not as tin-pot as we were, but there are still certain things that we don't have all the time that other clubs have. You know, like the training ground's not sorted quite yet and things like that. And you think, is he going to enjoy it? Is he going to accept the culture change? A lot of players don't. And he's just properly rolled his sleeves up and got stuck in. Great crack on social media, great crack in his interviews. He's just a top lad, and I think he's going to be very, very instrumental in anything we do this season. Great signing for me.
Yeah, he has been the pick of the bunch, which again, I thought that he would be actually. But yeah, he's what my granddad would describe as a typical Cockney, isn't he? In the way that he handles himself and sort of, he's a cheeky chappy around the place, and he's something a little bit different, and he's been a proper breath of fresh air in everything that he's done. And yeah, he's been, you know, well, scored against Ipswich, and he bagged two last night against his boyhood club, didn't he? So fair play to him, and long may it continue. And I hope that he's, I hope that he's dealing with the cold a little bit better than he said he was the other week on that Dan Jewell interview. But yeah, he's been class. For me, it has been a weird mixed bag, hasn't it? Like if you asked me throughout September, I'd have said, Jesus Christ, I think we're going to go, you know, we're really going to struggle because, well, we'll run through just, we started off August results, 2-1 away at Wickham, defeat, one at Rotherham in the cup. Then we beat Cambridge at home 2-1, beat Doncaster at home 1-0, who have been the biggest surprise of my season so far. The way that they've been horrendous. Crewe Alex, we won 1-0 away. Got beat with Oldham in the cup on pens, Milton Keynes loss, and then that was it for August. So a pretty positive start to the season. Then moving through September, we win at home to Shrewsbury, get beat at Sunderland, get dicked off Wigan, draw 3-3 at Morecambe, where they had 10 men for what, best part of an hour, where we really should have won the game. And then we got absolutely spanked at Oxford 5-1. So a pretty horrendous results in that month. But the Morecambe one felt like a defeat, didn't it? The return of the Morecambe fixture, we were buzzing. We went there. We only just got there because of the fuel crisis, didn't we? But it was a strange game, that, because I know that a lot of the lads weren't there and they had other things going on. It just felt a bit odd to me. It felt, the whole thing just felt a little bit strange, a little bit off.
Yeah, I think a few things contributed to that. I think that the fact they're riding the crest of a wave, so that the home ends were pretty much full, that was odd for a start, and fair play to them. We'll come back to that. But yeah, a lot of the lads were off for whatever reason, can't be helped. And when you've got such a sort of small fan base, and then within that fan base, there are certain people who are obviously more vocal than others. You only need to miss a few before it becomes noticeable. And it was still a good atmosphere, and we still did really well on the terrace. And it's good to see a lot of young lads coming through as well.
I thought we have to mention
coming home and away as well.
Yeah, we have to mention that there's one group in particular of young lads that I've seen a lot of, and I know a couple of them just from, you know, going on over the years and saying hiya, but they really seem to embrace being Stanley fans. And I know that they were at Charlton last night, a lot of the young lads as well. People like Kean Simmons, Declan Penluna, he was there as well. Fair play to him, because
one of the lads last night was saying, you know, Charlton away, we're gonna get back at 4 a.m. and I've got work at 6, you know. And it's for a while, I mean, you mentioned before how you wrote to the club a few years ago about the aging fan base and how it looked like there were no sort of young blood coming through on the terrace, but this new group's emerged and it's proper sort of terrace culture, isn't it? Like every away game that they're there in the pub with the flag, and it's just great to see. I mean, for us, being such a small club, just being able to run a coach to Charlton on a Tuesday, people don't realise how big that is for us.
Yeah, I thought it was impressive. Do you know what I mean? I thought that was impressive.
Fair play to those lads, and they make a lot of noise as well, and they are, you know, the future of the terrace. It's great to see them. If you're listening, lads, top lads, and bring your mates. But what were we saying then? Walking away, back to the point. Yeah, it's just a very odd atmosphere. You can't really explain it. Maybe it's a bit of apprehension at not having the, you know, El Lan Clásico for so many years. But then this, what got me is this strange thing afterwards where Morecambe, and like you say, fair play to them, to be getting 3,500 home fans, fantastic. You know, whether it be cheap season tickets, I know they're located not near any other club, but you still got to get them in. Fair play to you. But this thing about all of a sudden you can criticise our fan base, Stanley pathetic, only bringing 600. You know, we've been on Morecambe away many a time when the total gate, including Stanley, is less than 2,000.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and if they don't bring 2,500 to Aki, which they won't do, then it's all Billy Big Bollocks nonsense, isn't it?
No, I mean, it was a strange one, that. It was a lot of young lads that were getting involved with that, which I understand. But at the same time as well, the thing that annoys me about Morecambe, and I don't want to get dragged into this because I do respect what they're doing and stuff like that, but the thing that pisses me off about the fan base is they're so catty that it's like, there's one guy in particular, and I can't remember his name, but he always replies to me about something, and it's always that same little annoying fucking face, and he was bigging it up. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you know, and I just thought to myself, one, if you're believing that realistically you get the best part of 4,000 home fans in a regular season, you're delusional, or two, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Because like you said, we've been there many a time when it's about three men and the dogs there watching them, you know, and we've supported that, and you know, they nearly dropped out of the league 3 years ago, for God's sake. And to be honest, if they did, they probably wouldn't have even been there now. And for them to turn around and criticise us bringing 600, dearie me, lads, you should have been there 10 years ago when we rocked up with 200. You know, they'd have had something to say then. You know, it's really positive times for both clubs, and fair play to Morecambe. But you know what's going to happen this year, don't you? They're travelling well. If they continue with this run of form, they'll bring 1,000. And then they'll be giving it Billy Big Bollocks on Twitter, saying that they're a massive club, blah, blah, blah. All these young lads will come in crown. They'll be throwing shit everywhere, embarrass themselves like they did that year when the game got called off and that Black Mariah had to come and cart them all round. And then in 2-3 years' time, when the town's forgotten about the club like they usually do anytime anything like this happens, they'll be back down to the usual numbers and everybody will have a short memory again. So good luck to them. All the best. But let's just get a bit realistic about it and just realistic about the size of our football clubs.
Yeah, no, good points well made. And like you say, you know, how many times have we seen Morecambe bring a handful to Aki, Fleetwood bring a handful to Aki, you know, but all of a sudden these clubs get a bit of success and they give it Billy big bollocks. You know, it's like us trying to use our, you know, 3,500, 4,000, you know, League Two winning gates as evidence that we're bigger than somebody. It's like you say, it's either naivety or stupidity. But either way, it's daft.
Yeah, well, I also think that there's an element of sort of football Twitter, and particularly League One Twitter, is quite a small group, isn't it? So I think there's an element of trying to perceive yourself as a bigger club to fans of other clubs. Do you know, to almost make this narrative that Morecambe are a bigger club than Accrington for, say, the 10 Portsmouth fans that are going to hear about it, and then they're going to show their mates who show their mates. I think there's an element of that to it. I might be overthinking it, but I think it's a thing to try and seem like you're bigger to football Twitter, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, there is that sort of, you know, dick measuring contest that goes on social media, I think, you know, just in terms about who the best fans are generally, you know. And it's, I love things like that. We all like watching the videos of great fan bases and things like that, but you compare apples with oranges, you know. It's like again, if you take Morecambe, which we don't have a bigger fan base than us traditionally, but even if they did, you know, let's put Rovers in Heysham and let's put Burnley and Lancaster and see how you get on, you know, or Plymouth. I've had this with a Plymouth fan before, you know. It's like, oh, you know, we get 10,000 if we're going well. So yeah, but your derby's Exeter. It's 40 miles. That's your derby. An 80-mile round trip is your derby. So that's like Stanley considering Leeds a derby. Do you know what I mean? There's, in that 40-mile radius from Accrington, you must have at least 20 clubs.
Oh, yeah.
It's not comparable at all. And then you think about, you know, we've been very successful, but we've only had 15 years of league football. We've only had 16 years of full-time football, you know, and out of that, we've only had a handful of those years on a stable financial footing as well. So you've got to give us time. You know, if you pick a random Unibond league club now, say Corn, you know, if you put what Corley did for the three promotions in 6 years, if you got Corn into the Football League, and then there's an extra league in between now, so let's give them 8 years. You got Corn into the league within 8 years, they would not suddenly be getting 4,000 on.
No.
You know, that's what he's done. So you've got to make an allowance for that. And for us to grow, and for us to be getting 2.5 average on now to 3 average, fantastic. Having this conversation the other day, you know, you start off with a small population, then out of that population, take out the people who don't like football. Then what you're left with? 80% of those are Blackburn and Burnley. Then what you're left with? Your glory hunters. So you're only playing with a very, very small number, really. And pound for pound, number for number, you know, we do very, very well, really. And like you say, the shirt giveaway long term will help with that even further. I don't see why we can't, in 10, 15 years, be averaging 3,500, 4,000. I don't see why we can't be, you know, what Bury used to be or what Rochdale used to be long term, you know.
Yeah, but like you say, we're seeing the start of that with these young lads coming through. So maybe. Yeah. You just sounded like you smacked your head into the microphone. Is everything okay on that side?
Yeah, it's all kicking off. Shorten Police have come in and found out this quinoa's not organic, so they're just trying to batter me. But I've chased them away with a pork sausage.
There you go. Fair enough then, mate. So yeah, I mean, we're doing all right. I mean, only draw one game. That is crazy for us. We're usually quite the heavy drawers, aren't we? Next couple of games coming up then. Portsmouth at home starting on Saturday, then Gillingham away, which is always one for the purists. We've got Vale in the Cup, and then we're away at Fleetwood in the Papa John's Chuck a Turd Shite Wank Trophy, and then we've got Plymouth at home, who are riding high, currently top of the league, and then Saturday the 20th of November we are at home to Sheffield Wednesday. We did this in our last podcast, so the next 5 home games, we've got Pompey, Gillingham, Plymouth, Sheffield, and then we're away at Burton. Give me a points prediction.
Right, okay. So I reckon we'll do Pompey. So that's 3.
Okay.
Okay, I reckon we'll dominate the game at Gillingham, get scabbed 1-0. So that's still on 3. Sheffield Wednesday, I think we'll do a giant killing, so that's 6 points. Burton away, we'll get a draw. 7, I think Plymouth will batter us. So I'm going to say 7 points from those games.
7 points, okay. Do you know what? That's exactly what I had. That is exactly what I had. Yeah, some toughies there, some toughies. But listen, we're getting into the... we're getting to the good stuff now because we're approaching Christmas. It's when it all kicks off. I'm looking forward to it and hopefully get to a few games. Are you planning any more aways or?
Yeah, I'm going to get a train to Port Vale, I think, for the cup tie. It's like £7 each way from Manchester, so I'll just jump on that. Fleetwood and the Papa John's, I'll be honest with you, as I always say, I have no interest in the Portaloo Kinder Egg Trophy, whatever it's called these days, until it gets to the knockout stage, then I might raise an eyebrow. I just disagree entirely with the idea of making professional first-team clubs play under 23 Prem teams. But we won't go into that today. I think the big one, in terms of away days coming up, it's not too far away now. All eyes on Sheffield Wednesday away, 18th of December. Get saving your pennies now, because that will be planes, trains and automobiles, every man and his dog. That's the one, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm excited for that. I think that's going to be a good one. And then Wigan on January 1st as well. Yeah.
I'm toying with Gillingham. It doesn't appeal to me, but I haven't been. So to tip the ground off, I'm toying with it. But
it's one of the ones that I've never got to. It's something, it's like that, Plymouth. I've never been to Plymouth. They're the ones really that I look at and think I'd like to go to one day. But to be honest, looking at the rest of the league, I've been everywhere else.
Yeah. I mean, Gillingham's the one, isn't it? I'm sure we took something like 27 fans there once, and it was Tuesday night, and a lot of the motorways were closed because there's a lot of ice and snow, and people were doubtful the game would be on at all. It might even be less than 27, actually. But we took a tiny, tiny handful of diehards, and Peter Marsden, I think, was the chairman at the time, and he bought every Stanley fan a drink and some food. Because that's the few we took. Yeah. But it's just the typical. I've just got this horrible feeling. Gillingham away, we'll just get shithoused 1-0. Typical Steve Evans sort of smash and grab type thing.
Just looking at the start of December as well, I know that we'll definitely record before this. We've got 4 home league games in a row. Tuesday, Saturday, all at home. Which is
a big chance.
That's crazy.
We had something similar last year, though. We had 3, I think it was 3 in a row towards the end of the season when we were pushing for the playoffs.
Oh my God, I tell a lie. It is 3 in a row, sorry. My mind's not working.
We had 3 back-to-back and we sort of fucked it a little bit. It was a real chance to make some ground. So same thing again, you know. I think I remember when we won the conference, we had 4 home games back-to-back and we got 12 points. It just set us up nicely. So nice. You've got to win. It's unlikely to fall twice in a season, something like that, isn't it? So you've got to make advantage while you can.
Yeah, true. The Wimbledon, Bolton, Fleetwood.
And just on the point of home games as well, I made the point the other day that obviously, you know, the atmosphere and the experience for away fans is fantastic. You know, they love it here. They love the marquee. They love the friends, the stewards, all great things that we should obviously keep on doing. But I think people's perception a lot of the time is heavily favoured by the results. Because there's not many big teams that have had a big day out and we turn them over. Do you know what I mean? It's easy for Wigan fans to enjoy it when they win 4-0. It's easy for Sunderland to come here 3-1 and enjoy it and think it's a bit of a novelty to it. You know, I think if you ask any Bolton fans who were here for the 7-1, I don't think they would have enjoyed it.
That's the point that I was just going to make there. Yeah, I think they would be the other one where I think if they'd won, you know, everyone would be Holt would be getting 200 tweets, wouldn't he, saying, oh, thank you so much for the best experience of my life. You know, if they'd beat us 7-1, it's a completely different narrative.
One of my favourite ones ever was when we played Barnsley, do you remember? It was the record attendance at the time. And some Barnsley fan just put, Accrington away is so shit, it's brilliant. I thought, you know, fair play, but if we'd have beat them, then it's just shit, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know. But
like that Wigan fan said the other day, football is the only thing that could get 2,500 people going to Wackerington and looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, it's a magical game. But you know, I want less of that if we can. I want big clubs. I want big clubs' tears. I don't want handshakes and plaudits. I want to shithouse our way to a 1-0 win over Sunderland and Bolton. And I want them calling Harry Pell every name under the sun on Twitter. That's what I want.
And that's what you'll get, sir. Shall we do our Graham Branch Facts of the Week?
You can do.
Graham Branch Fact of the Week. It's the Graham Branch Fact of the Week.
Unlike Lionel Messi, Graham Branch has never had a bad game in La Liga.
Graham Branch Fact of the Week. It's the Graham Branch Fact of the Week.
Okay then, so general bits and bats. We've looked at the positivity that's going around the club once again this year. We've looked at fixtures and results. I just wanted to touch on something that is... it's a little bit... I didn't know whether I was going to say anything on this, and it's going to be a tough one to say, and, you know, I'll probably get some comments by it and people might not like it, and a lot of people might not understand it. But two things that did happen since the last time that we recorded were that, you know, long-term members of staff, Naz Ali and Martin Buzzer-Cook, left the club after the best part of two decades, which, you know, let's not make any... There's no illusions here. Everybody knows that Buzzer's my dad as well. So I've got a horse in the race, really. You know, and obviously I'm biased towards him and things like that. You know, Naz Ali, he's gone to be the kit man at Wigan Athletic, joining up with ex-Stanley in Liam Richardson, Peter Murphy, James Beattie, Ian Craney, everybody else who's down there in that end. So good luck to him. And Buzzer sees himself joining Burnley FC, the grounds team there after, you know, what, 14, 15 years at the club. And it's partly the reason why I haven't been to as many games, I don't think. And it's partly a reason why we haven't recorded. Because it's left a little bit of a bitter taste in my mouth and a little bit of a sour taste in my mouth. Because I think that when you watch Inaki Stanley and everything, like we do, listen, we contribute to this because we are the club's biggest fans. You know, when you're an Accrington Stanley fan in 2021, it's very, very easy to just see positivity and the glitter that surrounds the club. And I don't think that at times, you know, that is 100% true and 100%, you know, what has been happening and what goes on. I'll be honest about it. I think there's rumblings, you know, at times of, you know, and listen, I'm trying to be as sort of, I'm not going to be explicit about this because I think there's a time and a place to sort of speak about these things to people. And I definitely don't think that a, you know, putting out a podcast is probably the right place to do that when people don't have a chance to sort of give their opinions and sort of give their thoughts on things. But, you know, for example, with Buzzer, you know, he was at the club for the best part of two decades, you know, and in that time, I don't think it can be downplayed really just how much shit that man took and just how little in terms of resources and support he had in that time. You know, for the massive majority, up until the last, what, 2-3 months of him being there, he was the only full-time member of staff being paid to look after the pitch. Add that to the fact that there's not much investment in terms of machinery and in terms of, you know, the stuff that he needs to do his job properly. You know, it's been said that he was a miracle worker, you know, by a few people. And, you know, I won't use superlatives quite so much like that. But, you know, he did a bloody good job there for a long, long time. And he did not get the plaudits that he deserved. And I truly, truly believe that. And I think it's really, really sad that in, you know, after 14, 15 years at the club, I can't remember what it was at the top of my head. He feels like he has to go somewhere else. Because I think that he saw himself there till, you know, till he was retired. And, you know, during that time, he's had his own personal issues along the way as well, which he's been very, very upfront about. And he's had no issue being very public with that. And they are well published and fair play to him. But I do think at times something has to be said about the fact that I feel like over the last couple of years, especially, you know, when games have been called off and when things have been done, he's been treated as a bit of a whipping boy. And as a bit of a scapegoat. And, you know, I've been very, very sort of vocal to fans who have given opinions about it on Twitter, which, listen, every single person has the right to give an opinion on Twitter about, you know, what they think is happening with the football club, and particularly with the pitch when they want to see a football match go ahead, you know. But what I think back to is, we mentioned it earlier, is the Bristol Rovers game last year where Stanley won. We won 6-1, didn't we, in the end? Was it 6-1? I think it was 6-1.
6-1, yeah.
And before that game, you know, they delayed the kickoff half an hour because the pitch was struggling. And, you know, what I do not think is okay. I think it's absolutely fine for fans to give their opinion and for fans to say things. And, you know, Twitter's a cesspit at the worst of times, isn't it? At the best of times, sorry. What I do not think is all right, and what I think is different, is people in the club and in positions in the club, high positions, to be openly sort of mocking and belittling an employee. And I do think back to that Bristol game, and I think back to a couple of tweets from people in the club where I thought they were belittling of Buzzer as he was on the pitch. You know, I was at that game covering it for the paper. He was wandering around, you know, churning his guts up, you know, at 50 years of age, pulling absolutely everything that he had into that pitch because it was his pride and joy, flogging his soul out to try and get that game on. Doing everything that he could to get that game on. And then meanwhile, you've got, I'll say it, you know, I am talking about Andy Holt here. You've got a chairman in the sponsors area with his mates, just having a beer, having a laugh, tweeting about it, belittling decisions that were made in a patronising tone that I think it's unprofessional. And I think, like I've just said, I think it's belittling, it's patronising. It's unprofessional. And you know what? I think it's out of order as well. And listen, we have seen so many pros about Andy Holt on Twitter, and everybody on Twitter, you know, there's pros and cons to how vocal he is about things. And mostly I do think it's a pro. I think most of what he says is positive. The way how he's open about the game, how he's open about the way that the FA works and things like that, I think it's really good, and fans can see that up and down the country. I think it's different when you're mocking employees on Twitter. And I just wanted to say that because I think that as an employer, again, you deserve to have answers about certain decisions that are being made with your money and with your, you know, your resources and why you're paying people. But I think that you do that in a way that is professional, and you have a little word with him after the game. Why has this decision been made? That's what I'd do at work. That's what you'd do at work. That's what I think 99% of people listening to this would do at work. What I think is out of order, and listen, I have it on really good authority from a few different people as well, that these conversations do not take place. That is said on Twitter. It's laughed about. Certain things are liked that, again, belittle him because people just say shit that they don't care about and they don't understand. And then these conversations about why this decision didn't happen, why this decision was taken, that conversation never takes place. So it's just a tweet taking the piss out of someone. And there's never ever conversation, anything, you know, anything after that. So I just wanted to say that because it's left a bitter taste in my mouth thinking about that. Because I think when you've got a chairman in particular who's so who's so sort of involved with Twitter and social media. And I think he loves it, and he gets off on it in a way. I think he enjoys being seen as this sort of man of the people, which, again, fair enough. I enjoy some of the stuff he does as well. I think when you've got somebody who's so Twitter orientated that little comments here and there seem to contribute to decision making. And to be frank, I think that that is part of the reason why Buzzer thought, and other people as well, that, you know what, I don't have to deal with this. I can go and, you know, be on the same money elsewhere, not have to deal with this pressure, actually have not be chastised and ridiculed by the people that are supposed to be supporting me, and go and enjoy my working life somewhere else. And it hurt him, that, because he's put absolutely everything into that place and everything into that pitch, and he's been there since day one, you know, of the Football League, to be fair to him. And I just wanted to say that because I think that there's so much positivity around the club. But I think that at times there's this undercurrent where when something's shit and when something horrible happens, you can't say anything because you are, you know, the Twitter mafia get after you. And you know what? We might lose all of our subscribers after me saying this. That's how sort of strong I feel this weird cult of sort of positivity is around the club. But it's left a bit of taste in my mouth. It's the reason that I've struggled to get to games. It's the reason that I've struggled to write anything. It's the reason that I've struggled to pick up this microphone. But it has. But it's done now. And, you know, of course, as soon as Buzzer leaves, they invest the best part of £500,000 into machinery and goods and this, and they give this new fella this and that, and good luck to him. But I just think it's a little bit rich and it's a little bit of a piss take. And I hope that Buzzer enjoys less pressure with better facilities. And you know what? I'm happy that he's away from it all, because he doesn't deserve that after all that time that he gave to Accrington Stanley Football Club. But yeah, I just wanted to say that. I don't know if you've got anything to add about that.
No, there's not much you can add to that, really. Quite a sort of, you know, rightfully sort of passionate and steadfast defence. And I think it would be more insulting to anybody who listens to that and takes umbrage. I think it would be more insulting to everybody to sit on something like that. You know, anybody who has an ounce of empathy or, you know, a sense of sort of balance can listen to that and understand how it would make them feel and what they think is right or wrong. And like you say, social media is a cesspit. Social media is like standing on the roof of your house and shouting out. You know, you've got the right to do it, but it doesn't mean it's right. It doesn't mean that people have to listen. So like you say, it's a good thing that you've taken the opportunity to get those points across. And also in terms of Buzzer as a man, you know, a lot of the people who've been on the Clayton for a long time have a lot of respect for him. You know, it'll be one of the best signings I think Burnley make in the sort of, you know, the coming years. We're very grateful, a lot of us, to the times when he, as you said, almost did miracle work. Took a sort of, you know, I don't know, he thinks back to the playoffs 2011. You know, the lines in the pitch just to get games on. You know, it was not through Buzzer's doing. But it was a potato field, and to get games on, especially in an extended season where you're playing extra games like that and cup ties, you know, some of those games, when you look back at the footage, to get them played was as you say, relatively miraculous and on a shoestring budget as well. So I hope people listen carefully. I hope they don't jump to conclusions with what you said there. I hope they weigh everything up and come to their own sort of rational conclusions. But certainly, you know, there are a lot of people at the club who may not be as vocal as some, but they are very grateful for the time and effort and service that Buzzer gave to the club. Top man and top red. That's all I have to say, really.
True, and he's the example. And, you know, but I do think to, you know, Naz and people like that as well who have left for their own reasons as well. And I just it's sad to see him go because they've just been part of the place. But like you just said there, you know, I'm not trying to start anything. And I know that people say that I'm a very sort of negative person, particularly about Stanley and whatever. I'll openly have a conversation with anybody if they approach me about anything that I've just said. And I don't mean any offence to anybody, but I just felt like that's just stuck with me that night in particular. And now that he has left the club and he's sort of not employed there anymore, I just wanted to take the time to say that. Anyway, shall we do the follow on Abuji?
We shall indeed.
So, this is his clubs, right? Preston North End, Huddersfield Town, Barnsley, Peterborough, Cambridge United, Swindon Town, Brentford, Wickham Wanderers, Shrewsbury Town, St Albans City, Macclesfield Town, Accrington Stanley, Weymouth Walking, Grays Athletic, Southport, Boreham Wood, Tooting and Mitcham United and Cheshunt.
The Honour Bounty Hall of Fame. The Honour Bounty Hall of Fame.
You mock Fall Honour Bounty, but he's the greatest striker over 6 foot with a surname in with awe that has ever played for us in the Football League. 6'5", stealing a living.
Do you know what? I've decided. We are going to call it after him then. What? How do you say his first name?
Fallen.
I always thought it was Fallen. The Honour Bounty Hall of Fame.
You're listening, Fallen, top lad.
The Honour Bounty Hall of Fame. Okay then, so the follow on Abuji, the first person that I think we're putting in this year, this season so far, and it's somebody who basically it was just somebody that I was reminded of fantastically when I saw him playing against us last week, a couple of weeks ago for Ipswich, and he is Janoi Danasian. 99 appearances over two spells, joined in 2016 and then another spell in 2019. Sorry, coughing there. League Two winner and played a massive part of that season. Instrumental, really, in what Sean McConville said. In the 2018 season, we were very hard to beat, more so than the playoff year. We were strong and difficult to break down. Janoi was quick, confident on the ball and a great passer. He complemented the wingers and front two magnificently with his darting runs and strong passing into the channels and back lines. You know, and his career at Ipswich since has stuttered at times, but he was playing against us, like I said, a few weeks ago, and he looks to have gained a foothold into the side that now obviously Paul Cook is managing, and long may it continue. He's a top bloke as well, who seems to still speak to fans online, does a lot to stay in touch with a lot of people, and wishes everybody all the best. So I just thought he was a very fitting person to put into the Hall of Fame, not just because of what he gave us on the pitch, but for what he was like off the pitch as well. So, memories of Janoi.
Yeah, I think two things jump out there. One, you know, that Ipswich Town is slowly turning into wacky expats, aren't they, with Caden and Cameron Burgess as well. Mm. But I think over time, every sort of main first-team player of the Championship season will probably sort of, you know, get the way into the Hall of Fame because they're all legends and they're all eternal champions. But you're quite right. It's, you know, it's difficult to think of, you know, long serving or sort of successful fullbacks, really. You go back to sort of Steve Hollis and Liam Richardson. And obviously, you know, recently we play this three at the back. So it's sort of a dying breed now, but he was just so solid, both defensively and going forward, as Sean McConville said. 99 games. There's something about that irritates me. You just want the 100, wouldn't you? You know, but great player, great on the overlap, decent crosser of the ball. And he was always just very reliable. Like, I always think for a defender, you just need to have a 7 out of 10 game every week. That's all you need. You know, whereas some defenders, especially, you know, when they're on the younger end or on low and they're not used to the pace of the professional game, they'll give you a 10, then a 5, and they'll fuck you over. You know, I can't really remember him making many mistakes or costing us games or even things like, you know, like daft red cards and things like that. It was always Mr. Consistent, 7, 8 out of 10 every week. And that gives a platform then for the rest of the team to build on. Your winger can gamble and go forward a lot more because they know he's there behind them, you know. Just a class act, really. I was really disappointed when he left. And there were a lot of whispers that he was going to come back permanently, but I think wages might have been a stumbling block, but it wouldn't surprise me to see him back at some point. Great player.
He was. And I mean, like you say, I think wages, I think when you go and you're playing at somewhere like Ipswich, you're going to struggle to come back to us, aren't you, at any point, really. But yeah, like you say, only great memories of him. An absolute legend, and I wish him all the best in wherever he goes. Sort of, I hope that he can get himself to be, you know, the player that we know he is at Ipswich, because I know that he's got a lot of shit off their fans. I think he was in the bomb squad last year, and also he pretty much helped pay for that stand as well, didn't he?
He did indeed. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think there should be a raw milk if he starts to get more international recognition, because I know he's been called up for St. Lucia before, I believe. If that is the case and he gets called back up again, I think there should be a raw milk expedition to just make sure he's doing well. All expenses, trip to St. Lucia.
Yeah, hopefully this can get a sponsor to pay for that as well. And we're going to have to start putting together some sort of actual team sheet here, because I can't remember who's in and who's out. But he well and truly takes his place at fullback in the Fola Anabuji Hall of Fame.
Just had a revelation, by the way, that this is the first podcast where we've mentioned Morecambe and not mentioned the Peter Murphy goal. So I think you should just shoehorn that bad boy back in.
Incorrect. It was the only podcast, but you've only just mentioned it. You just mentioned it.
Exactly. So. Yeah.
You know what? And there isn't a better place to leave it than that, mate. I think that'll do.
Brilliant. Excellent.
Gibby, it's good to be back. Let's not leave it as long next time. Yeah, let's try and get one done sooner, eh?
Absolutely. Well, good to be back. Let's not try and... do you know what? Take that out. I've nothing fucking witty to say.
It's just... Ta-ra! Thank you for tuning into Raw Milk. Our theme music is Mr. Powder by Deja Vega. Our producer is Scott Borton. Follow us at Raw Milk Zine on Twitter and Instagram, and Raw Milk Fanzine on Facebook. You can also download, subscribe, and like all of our podcasts at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Up the Reds!